You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
We all know how important it is to keep your eye on the money, and not just your own. Stay on top of the latest financial and market news with Yahoo Finance, a podcast that releases new episodes almost every day. You'll hear a brief overview of the biggest news in the financial world, all in 3 minutes or less, right after markets close. Check out Yahoo Finance wherever you get your podcasts. That's Yahoo Finance wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Kick-Ass News. I'm Ben Mathis. Intercom is the business messaging platform that does the manual work for you, automatically qualifying leads and scheduling demos. Their chatbot and messenger free you up to focus on the prospects most likely to convert. You can leave your pipeline to chance, or you could use Intercom. Start for free at intercom.com/growth. That's intercom.com/growth. Support for today's show comes from Citizen. Isn't it time you saw the light? Citizen makes watches that are powered by light, any light, and will never need a battery. So stay on time with Citizen's collection of EcoDrive watches. They're for just about everyone who prefers to be on time. Visit citizenwatch.com/podcast for more. That's citizenwatch.com/podcast. And now, enjoy the show. Hi, I'm Ben Mathis. Welcome to Kick-Ass News. My guest today is a really good guy, and he's funny as all get out. Paul Rodriguez was named one of Comedy Central's 100 greatest stand-ups of all time, appearing in dozens of films and TV shows, and he's also a co-owner of the famous Laugh Factory Comedy Club in Los Angeles. Now he's got a new stand-up special called The Here and Wow, available beginning May 1st, and today Paul comes on the podcast to tell stories from his 40-year career as an actor and comedian, including his first time on The Tonight Show, why Johnny Carson banned him from NBC Studios, and the higher power who intervened on his behalf. He talks about getting his start as a valet guy at the world-famous Comedy Store and how that led to his being a runner for Richard Pryor. He shares some advice Comedy Store owner Mitzi Shore gave him starting out and recalls some wild times living in a comics dormitory above the Comedy Store. Plus, he tells the story of his worst gig ever. Coming up with Paul Rodriguez in just a moment. In his 40-year career, actor, comedian Paul Rodriguez has starred in the first Latino-centric sitcom ever with ABC's A.K.A. Pablo, hosted The Newlywed Game, and his own Univision talk show in addition to appearing in dozens of films and television shows. Comedy Central ranked him among the 100 greatest stand-ups of all time, and now he's coming out with a new stand-up special and album called The Here and Wow. Paul, thanks for coming on the podcast.
Well, you're welcome. I was going to call it hashtag me too, but they couldn't clear that. Then I wanted to call it 50 Shades of Gray Hair.
Now, is it a coincidence that you're releasing this new stand-up special the week of Cinco de Mayo?
No, it's no coincidence. That's the genius marketing of the Caucasians who run my career. They figured, hey, you know, Latino, Cinco de Mayo. I told them, see, there's several other holidays that are obscure. I said, you're the 16th of September, and the other one is the first and the last, the first and the 15th of the month is very popular with my people. And, you know, there were several things, but I'm so happy to just have an opportunity to do that. Hollywood has no need for some 63-year-old dude, but I'm glad I didn't become that old guy I used to criticize, you know, the one who thinks everything sucks and young people today are crazy. And you know, back in my day, a lot of reminiscing. Because in reality, you know, aging is something that it'll happen to all of us if you watch both ways before you cross the street. You know, and I never saw myself getting to be this age. And, of course, you know, the longer I live, the older I get. But it's not bad.
Do you feel like you're becoming your father at this point? Has that set in yet?
Oh, it's set in. You know, yeah. It morphed. I shave myself in the mornings and I look in the mirror and I go, oh, man, it's happened. I've become my dad. And I have his pain. You know, he used to make that when he laid on the couch, he had this. I do it exactly like him, and you can't help yourself. I guess it's okay to become. It could be worse. You could become the neighbor's the guy, and that will say a lot about your mom. But you know, I looked exactly like my old man.
You have a son who actually shares your name, and maybe getting close to becoming the more famous Paul Rodriguez.
Oh, he's absolutely there.
Yeah, what'd you tell him when he told you that he wanted to become a skateboarder?
I was disappointed. I didn't support him in that, and I hate myself for doing that but I didn't know anything about skateboarding. To me, skateboarding wasn't a way to make a living. It's something you did because you couldn't afford a bike. it was a mode of transportation. I didn't know he had done that until people started telling me, you have a son that skates? And I go, yeah, you know, I mean, doesn't your kid skate? I didn't think that the things that he did with that skateboard were worthy of being paid thousands of dollars, whatever it is, you know. He'd get a board, he'd flip it, and then he'd jump a couple of steps, and I go, you know, every kid can do that, but apparently not.
He's a big deal.
He did. He became a big deal, you know, and after he won the X Games. As a matter of fact, the first time he invited me to go see him was at the X Games here in Los Angeles. And I begrudgingly, because as mom said, you know, you're not involved in his life. You're always gone. All right, I'll go. So I went thinking, I don't know what the X Games were. I said, was it some kind of porno competition? You know, is it a beer sponsorship or what is it? And I go there and he won. He won the gold. And I saw the attention and the tons of people that were there. And all of a sudden, I'm bursting with pride. We were in the paper. And there was an article called "And the Sun Also Rises." And there was a lot of people talking to me about my kid, and I honestly couldn't take any credit for it. If anything, I obstructed it. I remember telling him, come on, son, you're a better golfer. And he was. He was, by the way. He gave up golfing. He shouldn't have. He was really good. And I said, oh, son, you know, what is this skateboarding? And he said, Dad, you don't even know. There's money in this. I'm going to make it. I said, who? He goes, you ever heard of Kevin Costner? I go, Costner? No, Costin. No, I haven't heard of him. That guy's got a shoe and he's funny. I said, I haven't heard of him. Man, that was his hero. And then of course, he won a couple of times. And then he got a shoe deal. I said, you're kidding. Nike is paying you this to what? He goes, hey, I got my name on a shoe. That's when I took him serious. And I said, yeah. Nike, really? They're paying some good money. And needless to say, he's paid my taxes so many times already that whenever my career has fallen, he's been there to pick me up, doesn't hold a grudge, has still claims me as his dad, and life's good.
Yeah, you never see a comic with a shoe deal, do you?
You don't, you know, a gumshoe.
Yeah, best comic never got a shoe, did they?
Yeah, you know, Seinfeld, you see him with a shoe, you know, Carlin, you know, comics, we're not good spokesmen, I guess. I've been a spokesman for some big companies, and I don't last too long. I open my mouth, I say the wrong thing, trying to be funny. Next thing you know, I'm with Gilbert Gottfried in the woe is me section.
Oh, no.
Yeah, you know, I was a spokesman for Verizon. That was a couple of good years, the Pollo Loco, Pepsi.
Yeah.
Those are good monies, and I was let go because I go on stage, and somebody would holler that, and I would say, you know, just joke something about the chicken or the phone calls or can you hear me now, you know, and I get canceled, and I said, what happened? They never told you it was that, but I said, what were they in that club really? In Wisconsin? I mean, who somebody taped it?
Who did they think that they were getting? I had the same conversation with Gilbert. It's like they knew what his act was. What did they think they were buying?
Affleck. But who, I mean, we're comedians, right? First,
yeah.
They like us because of our brashness, and then they tell us to toe that line. Well, I don't know. You know, for me, I don't know about other comics. I would imagine it's the same. You know, to tell me not to do something is almost to say, okay, you could do this.
Yeah, you're almost encouraging it. Yeah.
Years ago with a show called The Comic Strip, and they told us, don't jump from the stage. These are real prisoners. These aren't extras. Don't jump. We can't.
Oh, you were performing for the prisoners,
yeah,
for the inmates.
Yeah, the heavy hitters there.
Wow.
And I said, well, man, you know, if I jump, what's the worst that could happen? They beat me up. I get some publicity. They're all Mexicans. I feel like I was home. There was some guys from my high school. It was like a homecoming.
Oh, really?
I jumped out there, and they loved it. I walked up to the biggest guy. There was a Samoan guy there from American Samoa, I think. Stood 7 foot tall, huge. He was like a building, right? I walked right up to him, and I said, stand up, you know. And he stood up, towered over me. And I said, I don't plan to come here, but if I ever wind up here, I want to be your bitch. and the whole place fell out. And from there I got my own HBO special. It did so much with just one moment.
Yeah.
One moment that can change your life, you know.
Yeah. Now, were there really people from your neighborhood there that you
there
remember?
There was. There was a guy named Oscar and a guy named Arnaldo. They're both dead. One of them died in prison. And it's weird because they went to jail on small things, you know, small
drug charges.
Nothing big. But once in there, they were forced to become members of the gang, mm-hmm. and then they had to do something to make their bones, and that landed. It's sad, really. I'm not saying, look, like Richard Pryor said, I'm glad there are prisons, but there are people in there that they just get caught by the system, and you know, if you don't join that gang, then your life is in peril. If you do join that gang, you're gonna survive, but now you're gonna commit a crime. It's a maze.
Yeah. It seems like we're just sending people to prison to teach them to become better criminals at a certain point.
Pretty much. Yeah. And, you know, going to prison here in America is bad, but it isn't bad. I mean, you look at some of these jails in other countries, that's bad.
Yeah.
I had a cousin that was doing time in a jail in Mexico City, and if we didn't send them any money, he's not going to eat. And they don't care. Terrible. The abuse is horrible. One thing is true. When they get out, they never go back. They have a very low recidivism.
Yeah.
You know,
or at least they learn to pay the cops this time
around. Yeah, right. Here in America, you know, you get full medical.
Yeah.
Now I think the Supreme Court just passed the fact that if you want to change your sex, hey.
Yeah.
Of course, they got guys who will do it there for a lot cheaper, but, you know, you don't want that. But they get full medical, dental, the whole thing, you know, because I don't know. It's kind of make it sound like they're recruiting, you know?
Yeah.
Hi. You know, you're homeless already. At least you get four squares.
But yeah,
I think the punishment is the loss of your freedom, you know?
Yeah. Now, where are you originally from in Mexico, Paul?
I was born, they tell me, because I came to this country when I was 2-3 years old.
Oh,
maybe.
Okay.
I was born in Sinaloa, a place that's well known for exports, I guess.
Are you the second most famous man from Sinaloa?
Dog Whisperer's from there.
Oh, is he really?
Yeah, Cesar is from there.
Still think you outrank him.
Hey, Felipe Esparza, the hottest comic right now, he's from there. You know, I used to have...
Is he a friend of yours? I feel like I heard him say that you were a mentor of his.
I knew that young man was very talented years ago. I took him with me. We were working big places. I always saw great talent, but then for some reason or another, you know, you'd want him for something, he'd disappear. But now he's very successful because he's got a woman that won't let him go, and she's straightened them up. They should credit her with the guy was always funny, but he needed someone that he loved more than himself. And she's done a great job with him. I'm more proud to him. I just worked with him in Hawaii in Honolulu. He's a beast. He destroyed them. I expect big things from him.
Yeah. Before you got into comedy, I think you served in the military.
I was in the Air Force.
You went into law school. At what point did you get bit by the comedy bug here?
That's a challenge. You know, what happened with me is I went to the Air Force. I figured if I have to see combat, I want to kill people from far away, you know. And I went to tech school. I had a great job. Made a lot of friends. And, you know, after I got out, I was going to school in the GI Bill. And I met a teacher, Mrs. Anita Cano. She's a professor. She's retired, I think. And I used to always make her laugh and stuff like that. Well, it just so happens that her husband worked as a accounting for the Comedy Store, you know.
Oh, really?
And she took me to amateur night. And because she says, either you're going to go up there and be professionally funny or just shut up and let me get on with class. You disturb me too much. You make me you make me laugh. I said, all right. So she took all my friends. I went up there. I killed that night.
Really? At the Comedy Store?
Yeah, without preparing nothing. Not at the original, at the one in Westwood. You know, they had one.
Okay.
It's not there no more. And I went up there, and I didn't prepare anything. I didn't know what I was going to talk about. But that morning, I had written the paper that the Los Angeles Police Department had shot a black woman with a butter knife. Her name was Eula Love, and it made big news all over. You know, they shot her something like 26 times, two big police officers. And I'm saying, you know, I'm not a big guy, but you give me a baton and any woman, I think I'll win. You know, I don't have to kill her. And I did that, a thing like that. And then I said, these guys ought to be fired for being bad shots. They shot 30-something times. That means they had to reload at point blank. They're wasting. So I took that angle. And they laughed. And then I said, whoa. So the guy managing the place said, hey, come back next Monday. And I did. And I died. I don't know what happened, man. Nobody laughed. It was terrible.
Oh, man.
I dejected and I felt bad.
I always hear from comics, the worst thing that can happen to you is to kill the first time you go up.
Right. You were chasing the dragon.
It spoils you. Yeah.
You're chasing that high. And it took me, you know, I seriously wanted to quit. If it wasn't for this this comedian that later we became good friends, his name is Mike Binder. He's a, you know, he was kid. You know, he's a big time director, real nice guy, good friends. And he told me, he goes, nah, man. He goes, you just got to go up there. He goes, don't just go to keep doing. You got something. I don't know what it is. He goes, I went on and she introduced me to Mitzi Shore, and then I auditioned for her, and she said, what do you do? And I said, I'm going to college. And she goes, not no more.
Really?
So, yeah. She said, I don't think you need to go to college. I never said that to anyone. I said, well, because you know
that's a big deal from her.
It was. She gave me. She. I love that lady. I just went to her funeral. It was very sad.
Yeah.
She gave me a job, and when she gave me the job, I said, I thought it was an insult, a demotion. I was sure you're gonna put the Mexican in the parking car, but it turned out to be the best job, the best job in the world.
Yeah, you were the doorman for a while, right?
The doorman.
Yeah.
The perennial doorman was Harris Pete. He's a legendary guy, but I was parking cars and stuff like that.
Oh, okay.
And I was kind of looking down. I thought I was gonna start in the middle. No, no. It's the greatest job. Think about this. When all these big comic stars come and they give you their keys to the Rolls Royce, they want to know everything about you. You get close. And it so happens that Richard Pryor came in there with a brand new Corniche Rolls Royce. And he said, what's your name? I told my name, you know, my whole name. He goes, where's Quentin? There was another guy there. I said, I don't know. I said, but I'm responding to you. He gave me $100 and he said, here, go give me a pack of Marlboro Reds. And I said, well, how? Take the car, really? Here I am driving a Rolls Royce. I found them a pack of cigarettes. I came back, and after that, I got hired as his gopher. It was the best job I ever had.
Yeah, yeah, that's wild, being Richard Pryor's runner, his errand guy or whatever. I mean, I don't even want to ask what kind of errands he probably sent you.
You know, about 3 or 4 months before that, I'm trying to pass these tests in school, and after that, I'm sitting right next to Silver Streak, right next to it was surreal. He was so generous and kind, and I can tell you, it was probably the best job. And it only lasted for about maybe 8 months, because soon after that, I got lucky, and Norman Lear gave me some bread, and I was
right. Now, at one point, weren't you living above the Comedy Store with a bunch of comics?
A lot of us did.
Who else was up there?
It was like a great place. It was like a very transient place. You had Kennison, you had Dice, you had Yakov, God, just about anybody at one time, and a bunch of girls that, you know, every night. It was ridiculous. It was, you know, I remember girls, I'm sleeping, a girl coming to my room, just laying down next to me, and I'm going, are you okay? She goes, who are you? And I'm going, I'm part of, this is my room. Who are you? She goes, oh, I'm just waiting for someone. Who? She goes, but in the meantime, you'll do. So there I was. I think I was catching somebody's overflow.
Yeah, you're a ringer. Now, have you watched the Showtime series, I'm Dying Up There? Is that pretty much accurate from what you recall?
It's some of it is, but none of those. I mean, Jim Carrey was certainly a bomb. When he came in, he was amazing. Just I never seen an impressionist like that. It was ridiculous. That was just this town was too big. Because Carrie would morph into these people, and he was doing characters that not your common character, not the kind of guys that Rich Little or you know everybody thinks they can do Cagney or whatever. He was doing Broderick Crawford. You know what that is?
Highway Patrol. That's a reach, though.
He was doing people that he could do anybody. By the way, you know, his face was just contorted and morphed. The best Clint I ever seen. He was just doing everybody. And when you saw that kind of talent, he was getting standing ovation every night. You went, this is over. What am I gonna do here? You know.
Wow.
It was powerful. Never seen anything like that. You know?
Now, was this around the same time as the comedy club wars between Mitzi and Bud Friedman?
Yeah. Well, that strike had just ended. Mm-hmm. I came right at the heels of that. And you had your Comedy Store comics. You have your improv comics.
Yeah.
I'm one of the very few, Robin too, I think. I'm one of the very few that it was okay. I was on the 15th year anniversary special of the Comedy Store, and 25th, and I was on the 15th anniversary special of the improv.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Huh. They both claim me, and I let them. I was, yeah, baby. You know, I'm sitting right next to Billy Crystal and Richard Lewis and Martin Mull, Robin. And then on the other one, I'm with Richard Pryor, David Letterman, all these, you know. And I was a new kid on the block. Did I deserve it? No, but was I going to turn it down? No. I was,
yeah.
But Mitzi was cool with that. She didn't hold no grudges. She loved entertainers. I was just at her funeral, and I really feel her absence because I hope she gets her due because she should get a star in the Hollywood Walk of Fame. She never mixed any words and told you what she thought of you. When I auditioned for her, they told me, "You sure?" Because once you do, it's not like she's going to come back next week. You got one shot.
Mm-hmm.
And that's and she was very gracious to me. But a lot of people, she said, "No, you know, you say funny things, but you're not a stand-up. You're a writer."
And they'd argue with her. That's what I heard, that she would always tell people.
Yeah, she always had something to say.
Yeah.
A lot of it would get offended, but in hindsight, it turned out to be true. She told me, she goes, "That mustache, shave it off. You're trying to look like Freddie Prinze. You don't need to compete with a dead man. Take that mustache off. You know, and that's what I, you know." I said, "All right, was I going to say no? The mustache is gone." I said, "But it's good with the ladies." She goes, "Oh, there'll be plenty." She said, "There'll be plenty. That'll be your problem." And God, was she so accurate.
We're going to take a quick break, and then I'll be back with more with Paul Rodriguez when we come back in just a moment. Hey guys, let me tell you about Dollar Shave Club, my go-to for razors, shave butter, and all kinds of good stuff. Dollar Shave Club delivers everything you need to look, feel, and smell your best. You name it, shampoo, conditioner, body wash, toothpaste, hair gel, even wipes. Their six-blade executive razor is the best I've ever used. I could get a clean shave off that baby even if I used it every day for 2 weeks. And now I've become a huge fan of their amber and lavender calming body cleanser. Man, do I smell good. And it's the best way to start your day, guys. But all of Dollar Shave Club's products are great and made with top shelf ingredients that won't break your budget. Plus, shipping is free with your membership. And here's a great way to try a bunch of Dollar Shave Club's products. For just $5, you can get their Daily Essentials Starter Set. It comes with Body Cleanser, One Wipe Charlie's, their world-famous shave butter, and their best razor, the Six Blade Executive. You can keep the blades coming for a few bucks more a month and add in shampoo, toothpaste, or anything else you need. Check it out at dollarshaveclub.com/kickass. That's dollarshaveclub.com/kickass. Listen up, folks. I want to talk to you about something important. Did you know that 71% of people say they need life insurance, but only 59% have coverage? That means at least 12% of people are procrastinating. And sure, normally procrastinating is a bad thing, but if you've been avoiding getting life insurance, congratulations, because while you were procrastinating, Policy Genius was making life insurance easier. Policy Genius is the easy way to compare life insurance online. You can compare quotes in just 5 minutes. When it's that easy, putting it off becomes a lot harder. You can compare quotes while sitting on the couch watching TV. You can compare quotes while listening to this podcast. Policy Genius has helped over 4 million people shop for insurance and placed over $20 billion in coverage. And they don't just make life insurance easy. They also compare disability insurance, renter's insurance, and health insurance. If you care about it, they can cover it. So if you need life insurance, but you've been putting it off because it's too confusing or you don't have time, check out Policy Genius. It's the easy way to compare top insurers and find the best value for you. There's no sales pressure and zero hassle, and it's free. PolicyGenius.com. When it's this easy to compare life insurance, why put it off? And now, back to the podcast. Who were your influences coming up in the business? Because there really was no Latino comic like Paul Rodriguez before Paul Rodriguez.
I love Freddie Prinze. Yeah. I was in the Air Force. I was at Reykjavik, Iceland, part of the 382nd, when I, through the teletype, I heard that he had taken his life. And I couldn't understand that. I said, here's a guy making $40,000 a week, which is a buttload of money then. It's a lot of money now. $40,000 a week. He's hosting The Tonight Show. He's beloved by America. It's not my job. It's a catchy thing. He's got a beautiful wife. He just, I said, why would he put a gun to his head and take his life? I don't know. But he did. And he's the only guy I ever cried that I never knew. And I remember my sergeant coming into to where I was working. And he said, "What's wrong with you? Family member?" "It's worse than that." "What?" "You know, Freddie Prinze passed away, Chico and the Man." And he goes, "What? Did you know him?" I said, "No." But my, that was my goal, to get out of the Air Force, to go to Los Angeles, find him, and say, "Man, I'm going to be your writer. I'm going to write some really good stuff for you. And you know, I'm going to be your stand-in," whatever. Never got the chance. But I'm good friends with his son.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, Freddie one time Prinze I was Jr. working at, yeah. at Albuquerque. And he read an article where his daddy was my hero, and him and he was 15, and him and his mom came to see me at the club, and you know, just a sweet kid. And I just in a passing thing, I said, "Listen, here's my address, Los Angeles. You get to be 18. You want to come to Los Angeles? Come, it'd be my pleasure to take you around." Huh. And one day the doorbell rang. It was him. I took him around. I had to go on the road, and I said, "Here, introduce him, Mitz." He took him around, and I said, "Man, the best." And I took off. A few months later, his mom calls me and goes, "Freddie's going to be on the Letterman show. He wants you to watch it. And he just got a little movie called I Know What You Did This Summer." And
yeah.
Next thing you know, he's a movie star. His daddy would have been very proud. Very
yeah, yeah. That's going back to sort of the experience of being a Latino comic. Mm-hmm. I've had other comics on the show who've talked about being conflicted about whether they wanted to be labeled a Latino comic or an ethnic comic, whatever their ethnicity is, versus being a quote-unquote mainstream comic. Was that ever consideration for you?
No, I never thought about it. I made my bed and I sleep in it quite nicely.
Yeah.
First of all, I did it. First of all, that's what I am. I'm an American of Mexican heritage. And second of all, that was my hook. It made me stand up from the crowd. There was nobody else doing it. I'd be a fool not to have used it. And really, what does it matter? Do they call Cosby the black comic? Do they call Pryor the black comic?
Well, they call him a lot worse things now.
Right now, yeah, in hindsight, yeah. But I mean, perhaps a bad example. But I mean, you know, is Seinfeld a Jewish comic?
Right.
Nobody has that ethnicity, right?
Yeah.
So if you want to call me a Mexican comic, I'm cool with that. The sad part about it is that I said, well, maybe some people might not see me. They think my show's in Spanish. But I guarantee you this. When you see my show, I talk about my Mexican experience and all of that, but I don't talk about that for an hour. I mean, there are other things you talk about, you know, but if it's my hook, I'm fine. All these other guys will say, well, am I Latino? Am I this? Let the audience decide that for you, you know?
Yeah.
What you should be is funny.
Well, yeah, and you talk about the universal things, about family and that sort of thing, which crosses all ethnicities. So.
Oh, you know, moms are moms, you know, that's the same race everywhere. And I just talk about the absence, her absence especially. Mm-hmm. And, you know, an old person, not that I'm that old, but I mean, an old person, the older you get, the more funerals you go to, the more of your friends. I went to New York not too long ago and I looked at my phone book and I realized that all those people are gone. It's hard to believe. I used to go down and hang out with Tito Puente. You know, he was a good friend of mine.
Really?
He was a genius.
Oh, yeah.
He was a good friend of mine. And I look for so-and-so, Ralphie Mercado, who used to run this nightclub over there called the Latin Quarter. They're gone.
Oh, yeah.
They're all gone, you know? And I'm going, wow, it's really strange that, you know, they're not around. That's what old people do. I used to make fun of my grandpa because my grandpa went right to the obituaries. When he'd sit down in the El Opinion, his Spanish people go right to the obituaries, and he'd get this big joy going, "Hey, I outlived this one. Oh, I knew this guy. Look, I'm still here." That was his great joy. And I said to myself, "Man, is that going to happen to me? Am I going to sit here and go, oh, yeah, oh, I'll tell you that George Lopez is gone, and here I am?"
You know? Well, you know, I got to ask you about Carson because I know, especially in that era of, you know, the mid to early 80s, that was when you really made it as a comic, when you made it onto The Tonight Show. What was that first time like for you?
Well, naturally, I wanted him to call me, but you can't do that. You just have to do your best. And he did call me, and I was lucky. I sat
to the couch.
To the couch, I sat.
Yeah, wow.
I did it 12 times. It was the greatest time. That's what, you know, you really weren't a comic. You were, you know, but when you did The Tonight Show, it was like a fraternity, you know. It's like overnight. People in Boston, everybody knew you were a comic. Mm-hmm. Carson has said your name. There was no question about that. You needed that. I don't know if The Tonight Show has that kind of clout now, but it certainly did back then.
Well, they don't have as many comics on.
That's sad, too, because it used to be the goal. But let me tell you my heartbreak with Carson. I was promoting my first HBO special. I was scheduled to do Carson on Friday and Joan Rivers on Monday. And I get a call from Freddie D. Cordova telling me that... they couldn't legally tell me not to, but Johnny wouldn't like to see that, you know? And I'm trying to be cute to him. Well, tell him not to watch. But I could not say no to Joan. Joan had been so, you know, she'd been so nice to me, so supportive. To me, a friendship means you're a friend through good times and bad. Joan, I really loved her, you know. She gave me so many, she was a walking book of comedy. She knew so much, right? She had just gotten that show on Fox, and there was that rivalry. I don't know why Johnny Carson felt like, because he loved her too, and then they, just because he got a show.
Yeah, you know, I think that from what I've always heard, I think that it was that she didn't run it by him, or at least tell him before he found out in the pay in Variety or whatever, and he took that really, really personally.
I don't know if that was really either way. Let's say she didn't run it by him, right? You know, what was he going to say? I mean, he was Johnny Carson. Was she a threat? No. She was no threat. Nobody was going to take Johnny Carson out. Maybe he was an icon, right? I think it was unfair because I heard from her that she tried to call him and he wouldn't take her phone calls or anything like that. Now, was this after she signed the deal? You also got to understand that her husband was the one that inked that deal. So she was caught in the middle. Johnny had been good to her, but once she got her show, I think if you're a real, you would have just wished her well. It would have been big of him. But no, he went out of his way to try to intimidate all kinds of people from doing her show. And a lot of people canceled on her. I wasn't going to be that guy.
Yeah,
she had been good to me, and I wasn't going to repay her like that. And it was a mistake. And when I told Mr. Carson that day, I said if I could speak to him, he was very short with me. He goes, I said, you know, I'm just a pissant guy here. I'm so grateful to you. You can't believe how grateful I am. But Joan Rivers has been so good to me. I'm between a rock and a hard place. What's the big deal if I go on her show or not? Am I asking you permission? No. I'm just telling you that I'm going to do her show because I'm loyal to my friends. And, and I hope that. And then he said, well, he said some kind of thing. And I said, you know, that's really fucked up of you, Johnny. And he turned to me. He goes, what? You heard it. And I said, fuck you. And I knew everything was over. And I was depressed for a long time. I said, how did I speak to the man like that, right?
Yeah.
My brother George put it in perspective for me. He goes, hey, Paul, you know, in all the time that Carson's been on the been there, there must have been at least 1,000. Wouldn't you say 1,000 comedians been on the show? I bet he don't know none of their names. But he'll always remember yours.
That's probably true.
That's what they had to cling on. Yeah, I regretted it. But what was I going to do? I think it would have been worse if I would have canceled on Joan. What an asshole I am because she was good to me.
Yeah.
And then I wasn't going to be exactly one of his favorites now. Mm-hmm. So, you know,
yeah.
I think even if he hated me or whatever, I think he has to respect the fact that I stood by
my
friend.
You kept your word.
I kept my word. She was my friend.
Now, didn't he ban you from the NBC lot for a while?
Yes, ban me. I didn't know
not
that.
Not just from the Tonight Show, but from the whole lot. Huh?
I couldn't go on auditions and stuff. So you know what I did?
You're kidding.
I went to a higher power.
Mm-hmm.
I went to Bob Hope. I had been on the Bob Hope special with Lucille Ball, which is something I'll never forget. It was like Mount Rushmore coming to life, right? And I asked Mr. Hope, I said, you know, I can't get on the NBC lot, and sometimes they're auditioning for sitcoms, and I don't know why, you know, I don't know who did it, but I think it was Mr. Carson. I told him my whole dilemma. He goes, yeah, Johnny's like that. He did. Don't worry, can I make a phone call? Just like that, you know? And next thing you know, I could go on the lot.
Yeah.
And I never walked up to the Tonight Show side and said, hey, Johnny. You know, I never rubbed it in, but I could go for auditions. I could go, you know, because it was very important.
Somebody, that was a big deal.
But that just goes to show you the power that Mr. Hope had, huh? Bob Hope.
Yeah.
Johnny told the guards, no. Yeah, we'd like to do that, Mr. Carson, but Bob said yes. And I'll always be grateful for that. He was
What was he like? Because I feel like history hasn't been kind to him since he's passed away.
Who?
You know, people to Bob Hope. Well, to both of them, but particularly to Bob Hope. I feel like since then, everyone talks about what a lech he was and how cheap he was.
I didn't know him that well. I can't speak to that. But I'll tell you, the Bob Hope I knew was someone that was helpful. I asked him about it. I said, you know, about the money. What do I do? You know, because I never had no money. You know, if I ever get some money, he said, just. It's simple, kitty. It's just buy property, buy land, buy anywhere.
Yeah, he owned pretty much all of Burbank.
He owned a lot. He was very generous to me. He was very feeble. The last time I saw him, he could hardly talk, but still he recognized me, and he was very gracious. And I treasure those moments. Whether he was lecherous, you know, people are going to say whatever, but the best response I got is what Pryor says. prior, I heard him say this. He goes, "What would you like people to say about you?" He goes, "Scandalized by name. You know? Just talk about me. Make up lies on me." In other words, it don't matter what they say. They're talking about you. You
know?
I didn't know his personal life. But a man that powerful, I would imagine, he had several. I mean, what would you do with your money? You know, they name an airport after you. The saddest part is the really hurt is because there was no way to repair the Carson situation. Mm-hmm. See, I really like Carson. He was like the master of it. You know, he could tell a joke and then he would make a bad joke good. You know, they were both great in their own genres, but to have somebody like that impose their will. Yeah. I mean, I'm a pissant guy, man. For them to say, make a choice. It's Joan or me. Either way, I'm screwed, don't you think?
If it's any consolation, I've heard that story from many people. Regis Philbin and all sorts of people who somehow, not even, you know, choosing Joan over him, just little things that he took very personally and then they never heard from him again.
That
he never spoke to them.
That is so fucked up for someone to be that great in every other aspect of their lives and to be so vile and vindictive in others, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. I figure we all carry our own cross. Hindsight is 20/20. If I had to do it all over again, I wouldn't want to do it. You know why? Because I'm afraid I would have not gone on Joan Rivers, and that guy I couldn't live with. Mm-hmm. I can look at myself in the mirror. Even at long after this happened, I went to Joan's house. I maintained a very good friendship with her, and she knew that I had done that because she knew who was being. And she said, you know, I can count in one hand those that weren't intimidated.
Really?
And I'd still have fingers left.
You could say that Johnny was generous to comics in that he had them on the show, but in terms of actual active generosity.
Joan loved comics.
She loved comics and she mentored them.
She had a library of jokes
so much
that was
more.
Like you would do a joke and she goes, "There's a joke similar to that done by." She had like a really? They had to go to the Smithsonian. I said, "Really?" "Oh yeah, this was done by so and so and so and so." And I said, "Wow, she had so many jokes." Her, and of course she loved Phyllis Diller. She, "I got these from Phyllis," she loved comedians. Period. You know, she wasn't one of these people that thought that that she was more comedians, less laughs for her. She really, really loved. I think Johnny loved comics too, but there was an agenda. You know, there was an aloofness. You know, afar.
You survived.
I'm
it wasn't
here,
the end
right?
of the world. Yeah, exactly.
I'm here. The pool's in. The patio's dry. I got a bunch of exes. I have bills.
Now, I mean, you have had this amazing 40-year career in comedy.
I'm Forrest Gump.
Yeah,
I've met so many
people. I mean, you've
met
so many people. You've done so many things. I always love to ask comedians what were their worst gigs, because I figure after 40 years, you must have had some whoppers.
I've had anything that could possibly happen while on stage has happened to me. There was a shootout in Lincoln Park one time with Cinco de Mayo downtown Los Angeles. I was at the Playboy Club in New York on 5th and Madison, and this lady got a heart attack. I was also there when Lennon was killed. They announced it. John Lennon was killed. I was in San Quentin there. But probably the worst episode that I've ever had happened in Banff in Canada.
Really?
I got paid big money for that. It was a Xerox corporation. And I got it, and I'm in Banff. And I'm really nervous in Lake Elizabeth, this big old tall building, right? At the very top, they had all their executives, and they had a motivational speaker, and he spoke very eloquently. And then it was my turn. I was nervous as all hell. So my manager at the time said, "Look, you're gonna be great. They know what they're getting. You know, just don't be dirty or nothing. Here, have a little shot of tequila here. Have some." And I took the shot of tequila, and I said, "Hey, man, it feels good, right? I was relaxed. Take another one if you're a little nervous." I took two shots of tequila, and that's all I took. 20 minutes later, I am blotto. I didn't know about the altitude. I wasn't aware of that.
Really?
I was way out of my. I was blotto. I couldn't talk. I was like four. What's that guy's name that used to do it? What was his name? A guy that used to go. You know, Johnny.
Oh, I know who. Yeah. The famous
Forrest.
Comedy drunk. Foster Brooks.
Foster Brooks. I don't know where Forrest is.
Okay,
I was three sheets to the wind.
Okay.
And I went in front of all these executives, and I'm going, comedians, hey, let's have a round for motivational speaker. And Oh my God, I threw up. I threw up. Not, I didn't
you threw
just
up
throw
on stage?
I hurled.
Oh my God.
They had to move out of the way. It was so bad that I went to my room. I didn't want to come out. I didn't even pick up my check. I didn't want the money. And my manager, of course, picked it up. He goes, oh, what the hell? Come on. Right. Come on. Yeah. Say to this kind of money, they don't want it back. It was horrible. It was terrible. I have never, but I got drunk. I was drunk. I didn't know about the altitude.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah, yeah.
The
altitude is a big factor.
I've never been there, man. I never seen. Yeah. I don't know what the hell. And I'm really nervous. And I had the material already checked out. I was going to talk about a summer job. I was going to talk about duplications. And I was, that was all routine clean, right? And it was, at towards the end, I'm going, you know, because I'm looking, I had to do 15 minutes, right? And I'm going, anybody need motivation? I hurled. It was. And to their credit, they never complained. I never got hired again. That's for sure. It wasn't like Epson said, "Hey, we heard about your ability to."
Oh my God! Well, one more time, The Here and Wow premieres May 1st on Amazon, Comcast, DirecTV, AT&T, Dish, iTunes, Charter, Google Play, and many other platforms. And with a comedy album to follow on May 4th, Paul Rodriguez, the Churro King of Los Angeles. Thank you for talking with me.
I appreciate you, and to all of those who wasted an hour listening to me. Don't get me wrong; I'm grateful. See it, buy now, it. I need the money. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks again to Paul Rodriguez for coming on the podcast. Paul's stand-up special, The Here and Wow, premieres May 1st on Amazon, Comcast, DirecTV, AT&T, Dish, iTunes, Charter, Google Play, and many other platforms. And the comedy album of The Here and Wow comes out May 4th. For Paul's upcoming shows, visit his website at paulrodriguez.com and follow him on Twitter at @ThePaulRod. Today's episode was sponsored by Untuck It. It's never a good look when you untuck a long, bulky dress shirt. That's why Untuck It makes shirts designed to be worn untucked. Casual shirts that are not too long and not too short. Shirts that GQ calls perfection. Log on to untuckit.com and use the promo code KICK for 20% off. Stop hiding your shirt with your pants, or your pants with your shirt. Untuckit.com. Your solution to perfecting casual. We're also sponsored by Intercom. Intercom is the business messaging platform that does the manual work for you, automatically qualifying leads and scheduling demos. Their chatbot and messenger free you up to focus on the prospects most likely to convert. You can leave your pipeline to chance, or you could use Intercom. Start for free at intercom.com/growth. That's intercom.com/growth. If you haven't already, be sure to subscribe to Kick-Ass News on iTunes and leave us a review. You can follow us on Facebook or on Twitter at Kick-Ass News Pod. And as always, I welcome your comments, questions, and ideas at comments@kickassnews.com. I'm Ben Mathis, and thanks for listening to Kick-Ass News. Kick-Ass News is a trademark of Mathis Entertainment, Inc.